Hello and welcome to Medi-Call episode 192. I'm Corey and here's John.
Hello. How's it going?
Daryl had something come up this week, so we got John to step in, which actually works out pretty well because John has been texting me all week about the latest spoilers of Secret Lair and Double Masters and things like that. I know you're passionate about these kind of supplemental products and sort of unique releases, so this will be a good one for us to kind of chat about.
Yeah, I mean, passionate's one way to describe it. I think another way you could describe it is I'm all cooped up alone in my apartment with my cat, and I can't talk to her about magic. I talk at her about magic. Like, I can't believe you get this much for that CMC.
Yeah,
times these days, she doesn't get it. But anyway,
do you just like do you bitch at her about how much Jeskai Luka you have to play against on Arena?
You know, to be honest, I don't play much standard on Arena right now. Okay. So I have not had to deal with that, but a little bit, yeah, basically.
Well, we are going to talk about that and more. Just kind of a little bit of smorgasbord here today. We don't have much competitive magic to talk about these days because there isn't a lot of stuff going on. Although there is there's a lot on online, right? So that's cool.
Mm-hmm.
But John doesn't have a whole lot of background in Modern and Pioneer, which we typically talk about. So we're going to cover.
You know, I played in the first televised Pioneer tour.
That's true. You did.
I was in one of the first on-screen Pioneer matches. Now, never mind, I haven't played a single game of Pioneer since then, and that was my literal first. Well, we played a little bit before the event that morning, right?
Yeah.
I don't do as much of those formats, but I'm happy to talk about, you know, the stuff that that interests me and what's going on in the Magic world. I certainly, you know, pay some amount of attention to all of it, like I think a lot of entrenched Magic players do. So
yeah.
Happy to chat about it every once in a while.
Speaking of, Pioneer has changed a lot since then. That was the first event in Madison we played at the Nerd Rage Games series, where they converted the event to Pioneer by, like, just, you know, Twitter poll the audience, basically.
Yeah.
And, John, I think you were playing green-black tokens, right? Hardened Scales.
Yeah.
And I was playing Izzet Phoenix. And we really had no idea what we were up against. And it was a very diverse field. I can't remember what actually won the event, but...
I don't remember either.
I remember that there was a green-black scales deck in the top eight because that was the deck that I wanted to play, and I ended up building Phoenix again, thinking that was a more competitive choice, and I just got wrecked all day long with it. So,
yeah.
Nowadays,
yeah, I mean, I got pretty destroyed with I got pretty destroyed with the Hardened Scales deck as well, but
yeah.
You know, what can you do? It was like one of the very first tournaments. It was really just about getting out there and, you know, being part of it and having some fun in an exciting new format.
And it was fun.
Yeah, it was great.
We got a quick shout out to our sponsor, ManaTraders.com. So Modern Medi-Call, all one word, no hyphens, will get you 14% off your first 3 months at checkout. Modern Medi-Call, all one word, no dashes, no spaces, nothing. ManaTraders is an awesome way to play Magic these days. I would stay away from purchasing Allurus. I would stay away from buying Mishra's Bauble. But if you want to play decks that involve them, which is most of Modern at this point in time, you may be interested in renting them too. So that's what I'll be doing, because when I look at the Modern meta right now, it looks like you kind of have to play a companion. And when you look at the Pioneer meta, it looks like you kind of have to play a companion. And this kind of made people think that we're going to see a ban, but last week on Monday, and we didn't cast last week, so we're going to kind of follow up on this now. There was no ban for Modern. However, there was a mention that WotC would be willing to take action on the way that companions worked out, if that was necessary, or was, you know, obviously still eyeing up those potential bans in Luris or Yorion, as they are the two most prevalent ones.
I think it's worth mentioning with Modern and what formats specifically. I don't know what kind of timing was announced ahead of time, but apparently this was not set to be an update where things would be banned or restricted in Modern. Like, apparently it's just on a different schedule. So they did comment on the different formats in the banned and restricted post, basically just saying, yeah, this might be basically, I think it was just a scheduling thing. Now, whether that's WotC, you know, kind of worming out of it and saying, oh, no, we only said we were going to announce these specific formats. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe that's kind of a different thing, but it does seem like it could still be on the table, even if it wasn't necessarily it didn't happen this time around.
Yeah, they're no longer locked into scheduled bans, but they are trying to provide as much clarity on that as possible so that people aren't left with like their decks becoming completely devalued overnight. And they did announce a week prior to the ban and restricted update that it would not affect Modern and it would not affect Pioneer. So people were aware that it was not going to happen. But I'm glad that they've brought up that it's something that they're looking at. Now, it does say that the win rates are not concerning and they've got a lot more data than we do. So that's, you know, that's a thing to consider, because when you look at the format and you see a lot of people playing companions and you see a lot of decks placing with companions in them, they are cool, right? And they're new. And don't people want to play cool and new things in Magic? So yes, they're powerful. Yes, they're strong, but are they oppressive? I don't think that having a lot of them around means that they're oppressive. In fact, it might just mean that they're interesting and fun. But that said, if decks have to convert to playing four Mishra's Bauble at the cost of 200 tickets just because they can play Lurrus, then I think it's warping the meta in a negative way, and that ought to be considered. So I don't know how you feel about this, John. Like I said, you don't play a ton of Modern, but I know you're aware of, you know, you've got your finger on the pulse of the game, and there's a lot of discussion about this stuff online.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, I don't want to... you know, even if I'm not playing all of these formats as much, I don't necessarily want to watch the same thing over and over either.
Yeah, that's a good point.
You know, like you see your opponent has a Lurrus in their opening hand and you kind of know certain things that are going to happen, you know, regardless of what the two mana or one mana thing Lurrus is getting back, you know, kind of what turn three or four is going to look like in general, or maybe five. And It does get a little boring over time. I think the interesting thing to get to, you know, you said, what about if we're seeing a lot of these running around? I kind of wonder what you think about the phrase they mentioned at the end of the post where they said, you know, we will consider something along the lines of, we will consider potentially changing how companion works rules wise. And to me, it seems like that makes a potentially good case for them saying, you know, just companions are going to be a thing we see moving forward more, because if it's a handful of cards and, you know, only, I mean, there's only what, 10 of them right now, and there's maybe five or six that see play and really only a couple that are really dominant. I think if you only have that handful of cards and you're going to say something like that, it tells me one of a few things. Either one, you're just saying it to make people happy for now and hope that things will calm down over time, which is possible.
Mm-hmm.
Two, it could mean we've already made two more sets, three more sets, four more sets with all these companions.
Yeah, I thought that's where this
and we're
is
not
exciting.
Taking them out. or, you know, a third option is they really do see it as a potentially big problem, whether that is for actual legitimate gameplay purposes, or even just your fans don't like it, because that's an important factor of this. You know, let's say you've got, maybe there was just one companion and you see it in 20% of your matches or something like that. Maybe that isn't, and maybe it doesn't even win that much, but you play against it all the time and you play a format like Modern where it's not rotating out. You know, if enough fans just really think it stinks to play against this card, that could be a big enough reason too. So I'm just curious what you think about what that statement could mean. And do you think we're going to get a bunch of these companions moving forward?
Yeah, I don't remember I saw it, but someone posted a screenshot of a question that Merrill posed on Twitter that was, which was really interesting if you completely disregard the fact that companions exist. And he said, what do you guys think about having keyword mechanics appear in two back-to-back sets that don't necessarily take place on the same plane? Because it seems like, you know, in the history of Magic, we've always had new ideas introduced and they were unique to Zendikar, or they were unique to Kamigawa, and then they were never visited again. And I think that you see a little bit more like longevity to older sets, where you don't have like, you know, Splice onto Arcane, which is completely is completely like boxed into this Kamigawa environment and doesn't like bode well for like Chaos Draft environments, for example, or those cards don't see a lot of relevance like with other interactions. So that is cool. I like the idea, absolutely. But people were like, well, does this mean that you are putting companions in more sets? Are you setting up for,
you know,
like,
I
you
think,
asked for it?
I think to just to counter that a little bit, I'm not sure the comparison to you know, something like Splice onto Arcane. I don't know if the comparison quite holds up, because back then we had three sets in a row with the same or similar mechanics building on each other. So you saw Arcane mm-hmm. and Splice onto Arcane throughout three sets. And now we just have one and they move on. So
that's,
you know,
yeah,
I think certain mechanics stick around for a lot shorter period of time. So I think, I know this isn't really the question you were getting at, but I think it was worth bringing up. But I could see them saying, okay, if we're hopping to these different planes every time, how do you feel about having, you know, whatever, mutate in two sets in a row? So mm-hmm. I could definitely see this as a possibility that we're getting companion, but I don't know if it means necessarily that.
It probably doesn't, but I think that it was more like a running joke that was what he was insinuating.
Mm-hmm.
But that said, I think you've got a good point in that, like, the fact that they're thinking about fixing the mechanic rather than just banning the mechanic is, you know, maybe that suggests that there's more to come, but it also maybe means that they're like generally pretty happy with the outcome, because A, it's selling packs, you know, standard legal packs to modern players and legacy players and vintage players. B, it's promoting a value-based game scenario, you know, and that's what players want, is they want value in interaction. And I know that it seems awful when you're getting drowned in interaction because your opponent found the Bauble Lurrus loop before you did and you don't have removal for it. But it is the part of Magic that's most interesting to players, versus this is a new card that got printed and it's like there's a Song of Creation combo deck that you just can't do anything about, for example. So I think it's,
yeah,
cool.
But I mean, at the same point, yeah, I get what you're saying. I don't mean to be contrarian,
that's okay.
but on the other hand, you know, you have companions like Zerda, which is like, okay, I'm going to be, you know, turn two comboed out of the game if I'm unlucky or something. I mean, maybe Modern doesn't have the turn two Zerdas or whatever, but
no.
But you know, I think Modern will. If Modern doesn't have a turn two Zerda and Zerda sticks around, it will eventually have a turn two Zerda, right? That's the kind of card that is just always going to be broken in something. They're always going to print more cards with activated abilities. They're always going to, you know, they're going to print something that has an activated ability for three that is absolutely busted at one or whatever. You know, well, maybe we get another like Basalt Monolith like thing
yeah.
in Standard anyway. I think the fact that they're just in your hand always and you can't interact with them ahead of time is really the biggest problem for me. If they were in your hand at the beginning of the game and you could interact with them, then that would make more sense to me. But the whole getting to have it in your hand basically, but your opponent can't touch it and it doesn't count towards the cards I'm drawing, you know, all of those things, it just pushes it into a point where it doesn't feel like Magic anymore.
Yeah.
But that said, we do know when they banned Oko that they said, you know, they basically kind of hedged similar sort of thing at the end of the post. You know, hey, we understand Oko's kind of busted, but, you know, we've got all these other sets that are along this power level.
Mm-hmm.
So get ready for it. So it does kind of feel a little bit like that to me, where maybe we're going to see companions in every set, which to me, I don't like that at all, because that just means eventually every deck, one of your sideboard cards is a commander, essentially, is a companion.
Yeah.
And that's just not the same game. So if we have it in one standard format for a while, I'm not going to be too upset. If it's every set and every deck just has to have a companion, that to me is kind of a mistake. But
yeah, it's definitely a cool idea. Like, I have to be honest, I'm excited to try out companions. I'm excited in different decks that I have never played before, or I'm excited to lodge companions in decks that I have played before. the fact that they're so ubiquitous is a little concerning to me. The fact that it's very difficult for certain decks to beat the value engine that is just simply like Bauble Lurrus is concerning to me. But the idea and, you know, the uniqueness of like the deck building challenge, which I know is kind of in quotations because in some formats it's not really a challenge to play two CMC and less, like Legacy, for example. That's interesting. And I think that we're seeing a lot of cool ideas like developed because of companions. Now, players are super competitive. Everyone's stuck at home right now playing online. Like, this is very quickly, this attention and this focus is really, really quickly diverted to how do we break this thing? How do we take over this format with this thing? And it's no surprise that it happens when there's something like this that just is kind of screaming to be broken. But the question is, if we have, say, like 34, 35 more companions printed in the next couple sets, like, do we still see the same two or three played all of the time? Or is there enough variety then that the format feels fresh and you don't end up against Lurrus every match? I don't know. I guess it depends.
I mean, right? I think they have to be... I think the thing is they have to be harder to cast. They have to have harder restrictions for this to be, I think, all that interesting in the long run to me. But at the same time, they if they want to print a bunch of these and have them, you know, kind of, what's the right word, dilute the companions you see a little bit, that means they also have to be better than Lurrus. And that's part of the problem is, like, if you look at Planeswalkers, when they first introduced Planeswalkers, those cards were very good, but they weren't super pushed. You know, look at that first set of Planeswalkers. They were good enough that people would play them, but they weren't so pushed that every deck had to have them.
Yeah, it was a good
And you
balance.
Look at Companion, and that's how they've, you know, right out the gate. It's just busted Companion after busted Companion. And so I think that's part of my problem with this. You know, I wasn't a huge fan of Planeswalkers when they introduced them. I'm still not a huge fan, but, you know, whatever. I've obviously gotten used to it. They've been part of the game for a long time, and maybe that's just the way it'll be with Companion at one point. But they did plan, at least from the beginning, having it be this long ongoing thing, and I don't think they started with them all that busted out the gate. And nowadays the design philosophy is we want everybody to want to play with all of the new cards, so they have to buy the new cards. Mm-hmm. Maybe that last part isn't explicitly stated, but, you know, they want more cards to be playable, which is, I think, a good thing overall. But then that also means taking these things and saying, okay, this thing that we think could be potentially dangerous, well, we got to make it busted so people play with it. That we want them to crack packs for this.
Yeah.
And that's the part that, you know, to me, it makes me think, like, how connected is WotC to their community if this is the reaction they get to something like this and they don't foresee it, or maybe they just don't care. Those are the kinds of things that I think of when I see, you know, over and over again, like, oh, we didn't really think that people would turn their opponent's creatures into 3/3s. We thought they would use Oko on their treasures,
right,
or food or whatever. You know, we get more of that stuff. So anyway, I'm not a huge fan of all of these bans and everything, but I do generally like them trying new stuff. And I think we're going to find out if this is going to be a couple years of companions or if it's just going to be a one-time thing. I think there's always new sets being announced, so I'm sure we'll find out soon enough if it's in the next set.
And this is kind of a tired argument, so we don't need to go too far into this, like, how do we fix a companion? But the point is, they've mentioned that they would be willing to look into altering the way that it is played, and that's encouraging and that's exciting, and I think that I'm glad to see they're willing to take that kind of action rather than completely banning the cards and invalidating people's collections and decks that they built. It's cool.
Yeah, I'll just say as one last thing to mention on that, I think I'm curious to see in you know, as the rest of the year goes on and as we get into 2021, if WotC follows up on this kind of thing. That's always the thing to really pay attention to. If any kind of company is making a promise, you know, I want to see, and again, they're not making a promise, but I want them to, at least my hope is, at some point in the future, tell us if they don't change Companion, tell us why. You know, just tell us what was the thought process behind that. Hopefully have some follow-up on that. The other thing, just before we forget it, you wanted to mention during this section about the other ban for Modo specifically.
Yeah, well, when we're talking about broken things, there was something that was literally broken in Modo last week, and that was distant memories. To the point where distant memories is the goal of a deck. Because what happens with distant memories, by the way, the card, if you're not familiar, which is very likely because it's kind of shitty, it's a rare, it's a sorcery. It's 2 blue-blue. For search your library for a card, reveal it to an opponent. If they may put it in your hand, or they may have you put it in your hand. If they do not, you draw 3 cards. So it's kind of like a bad, like, I don't know, like I don't see why you wouldn't play, what's the card that's 4 mana, draw 3 cards, you know, it's, mm-hmm. Anyways, the point being, the card is bugged to the point where when your opponent is given the opportunity to decide whether or not you put that card in your hand, they are no longer able to take a game action. And their clock just ticks away until they are dead. They cannot concede the game. They literally just lose the match to time clock at that point in time.
Awful. So,
people are building decks on Modo where they are like all of the sleight of hands, all of the Serum Visions, Anticipate, Mishra's Bauble, just to find and cast Distant Memories and protect it with Spell Pierce and, you know, whatever counter protection you've got going on, Veil of Summer. So, stupid. Thought I'd mention.
Yeah,
it.
Don't do that.
John,
you spend money on that Modo account, right? Don't get it banned.
Yeah, and so that's something worth mentioning. Like, the players that are doing this are bragging about it, and when it's cast, like, John, maybe you want to elaborate on this screenshot you shared with me from this player named PokeStab at 3:30 a.m. They should go to bed, by the way. It's just basically saying, like, yeah, it's a bug. I'm taking advantage of it. You can file for compensation, but you lose the game. It's just a waste of everyone's time. It's stupid. You're going to get banned for it. I didn't realize that people were so ballsy to just say straight up, like, yes, I am trying to break this scenario, and I'm not afraid of the consequences for play points. Like, what do you gain from it other than the play points that are going to be revoked from you when you no longer can access your account?
Yeah, also, you know, this is something that I've never understood with Magic. Well, with any game, okay? I totally understand some people just have that urge to cheat and they can't not do it, right? There's opportunistic cheating, that kind of stuff. Whatever. People make bad, poor decisions. But you don't become a better player doing that.
No.
You know, like, Magic players are a group of players that want to win. They want to get better at the game, I think, more than a lot of other games out there that folks play. You know, there's a ton of aspirational folks who want to win FNM and they want to go win a local tournament and stuff like that. That's all great and good stuff to go for it, but cheating will make you a worse player. You know, you need to lose and learn from those things you need to learn from those mistakes you made or how you lost or whatever. And I don't see what getting some play points on Modo, which is like basically the most competitive place you can play Magic online. Mm-hmm. Right. Like I don't get the point, but anyway, that card's banned because it's broken and people are exploiting it.
Yeah. And no one batted an eyelash. What's the batted an eye.
Yeah.
Because no one knew the card existed to begin with. So, there you have it. Anyways, point being, that's a thing. By the way, I just want to circle back to the companion thing because I remembered one thing I mentioned previously on the podcast, and that was the first and only horseman of the companion apocalypse was for Tron decks to play Jangantha just because they can, and now Tron decks are doing that. So it's Jangantha, awesome. Tron, mono green Tron with just a might as well include a 5/5 for 5.
I want to see a mono. I want to see like mono blue Tron or something, and with no way to cast it.
Yep,
no
just,
green mana.
Just so you can show your opponent and make them think that you've got green mana. Yes. Actually, that would be a pretty good bluff, right? If you're gonna play like turn one, like relic or turn one expedition map, your opponent's like, oh shit, green Tron, gotta do stuff.
I've got an even better bluff for you.
What's that?
If you haven't seen it yet, at some point, go out and go to the MTG Goldfish page. Saffron Olive built a deck where the challenge was to put as many companions as possible into the deck.
Yeah.
Because in the sideboard, you know, you can have as many companions as you want in your sideboard. And at the beginning of the game, it just tells you, okay, does one of these fit your criteria? If so, that's your companion for the beginning of the game. So you can change it between games. And he had one with like, you know, 5 or something of the companions.
just it's pretty awesome. Good reason just to say you could do it.
Well, it's so that you play the first one with the creature one, Moria, or whatever his name is.
Yeah.
So your opponent thinks your deck is full of creatures, and then mid game you can put in like your counter spells and stuff.
I see.
And switch to a different companion.
Yeah.
And by the way, you're also playing 80 cards because, of course, you've got to play Yorion, right?
Yep.
So, anyway, interesting thing to take a look at. It's pretty fun.
All right. Well, let's transition quick to this tweet you shared with me here. Before we get into the fun stuff about the new cards being added to the game, let's talk about the potential negative here. We got some terrible news.
Yeah. So I wanted to share this because we don't, I know a lot of folks who do participate in these kinds of events frequently, pay attention to this show. And, I just wanted to make sure we at least say that we saw this news, even if we don't know if it's confirmed yet, or we don't have that much info. But basically there was a tweet, alleging that CFB events will be dissolved this year and will not be fulfilling their contracts to the venues. So essentially that means potentially no more paper tournaments for the year, depending on what WotC does to, backfill management of those events, if they even decide to have them or what's going on. But yeah, essentially it seems like word has been spread through some people who deal with some of the contracts or whatever with some of these events that they've been told they're being canceled. So anyway, we don't have any more info besides that. You can go digging around if you want to find the tweet on Twitter. I'm sure it's on the subreddit somewhere. Hopefully we'll find out soon if it's true, and if so, what that means.
Yeah. The notion that this means that no other events will happen, that's pretty... That kind of presumes that this is due to like this company no longer being able to exist due like financial reasons. But if the case is actually that, WotC is maybe like renegotiating with another vendor to provide these services, then maybe there are other things in the work, as a backup plan from this. So there's not enough information to really know, but I just want to mention this guy isn't necessarily falling. It would suck for this to be, due to COVID, because they lost a lot of income from their events over the past 2-3 months. But it's also possible that, there are problems with the way that Channel Fireball handled events, and, we didn't know it from, behind the scenes perspective. So could be some other reasons for it.
Yeah. We really don't have, any more info about it. So who really knows what's going on, but I've got to imagine, one thing just to mention, in case you're not super familiar with CFB events, Channel Fireball itself is a separate entity. So when they announced that partnership, they spun up a new company called CFB Events. I think so that you can protect these kinds of situations. So CFB itself is not, wiped out because of this. Some other thing, but I can't imagine a world where people are even really all that comfortable going to a big Magic event this year anyway.
Yeah.
What are the chances that things are good enough that Wizards is willing to throw several hundred people into one room with, very little extra support? Like if you look at the way Magic Fests, GPs, et cetera, run, there's not a whole lot of people, a whole lot of staff there compared to the number of actual people there.
Mm-hmm.
Right. You have you have the judges running the events. You have the people like the actual vendors and the backstage people, but you don't have all that additional security. We went to that Pioneer event, and I mean, that wasn't a CFB event, but it's kind of similar sort of thing on a smaller scale,
mm-hmm.
but there was one security person there. Right. And there's several hundred.
Yeah.
There were over 100 people there for sure. There were like close to 200 people total in that room.
Yeah.
So anyway,
that's provided by the venue typically, but that's,
yeah. But my point is, that you need it. I think this year, until we have a vaccine, an actual, like, yes, this is not a problem anymore. Any kind of event like that, they're going to have to do either social distancing or some additional cleaning and stuff like that. And I just think you can't imagine that there would be a way for them to even run those things profitably in a safe way, assuming people do want to go back to those. So anyway, we're kind of in the weeds on this one. It means a lot to, I think, the potential future of just how we're playing in the midterm, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
But I just wanted to make sure we mentioned it and at least got it out there, and hopefully you know more next time you have a podcast.
Yeah. could be completely untrue as well. So that, again, not enough information. So I want to make that clear.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, moving on. Let's talk about the fun stuff now. Okay, we got through all the. You know, we did our due diligence on the companion discussion that we have to have every week these days. But now it's time to talk about the upcoming sets. So, Double Masters. The fun part of this is that there is a new set coming out, and it looks exciting. There are some splashy and flashy, seemingly commander-oriented rares and mythics being printed into this one.
Definitely. Or at least what they've shown us so far.
Right, right. Yeah, it seems to be like a Commander's Masters product based on what's been spoiled so far. So we can talk about those. Mana Crypt, Kalia of the Vast, Atraxa, and Blightsteel Colossus. Oh, Blightsteel Colossus and Doubling Season. One more.
Mm-hmm.
All of them mythic. And then each one has a showcase art, which is really cool. All of them brand new art, and that Mana Crypt. Ooh, that's nice.
Yes. So the showcase art, we should mention what they showed us. That's specifically the box toppers.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if you can actually get that art in the set itself. I don't know if they've said that for sure. I would guess probably.
I would think so too. Yeah.
But maybe not. Maybe not. You know, there is a chance this extended art and these are the showcase, like, kind of super art is another term for it. These are the ones where you have the name of the, you have like the name box and then the text box at the bottom, and the art fills up all the space, so you don't really have a border or whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, so they announced these five cards as sort of the initial box topper spoilers. The Mana Crypt, I want to comment on that art. Because mm-hmm. do you know what that Mana Crypt art reminds me of?
The movie Cube?
No.
That's what it reminds me of.
It reminds me of Mana Vault.
Yeah, yeah.
I think this probably started as Mana Vault. I feel like it had to have started as Mana Vault,
or
when they switched
it
to Mana Crypt.
To Mana Vault?
It doesn't make sense. Like, they even say the flavor text here. At first, they thought the vault was empty. Then the walls began to glow.
Hmm.
So if you look at the art for Mana Crypt, this new super art, it's got like all these weird, like, kind of fleshy, weird kind of curves or texture to everything. There's all these chains.
Yeah.
And there's these like these, kind of grid patterns in the cube space going up or whatever.
Yeah.
And if you look at Mana Vault, everything has the same art, and the actual cube is like chained down.
Mm-hmm.
Just like this. So anyway,
yeah,
conspiracy.
Maybe it's just a reference to it, and like in the vein of like all the Lotus cards have some kind of flowery Lotus appeal to them. This one is a similar similar card in function.
So what's the gimmick with Double Masters, Corey?
Oh, you're setting me up. Nice segue there, John. Well, it's pretty straightforward. It's basically where you have to buy two packs at a time.
But wait, do I get two packs worth of cards?
No, you absolutely do not. So two rares, two foils, potential for four total rares in a pack. That's the positive. That's the exciting part of this. But then when you see the part where it costs $16 a goddamn pack, then it's a little bit deflating, because there, I can promise you, there's still going to be the Comet Storm in this set. There's still going to be the insert, like, whatever shitty rare or mythic comes in the Modern Master sets and, you know, Eternal Master sets. And you're going to pay $16, and sometimes you're going to get two copies of those and two commons that are foil.
Yeah, the best joke that I saw was now you can open two Tree of Perditions in one pack.
Tree of Perdition, that's the one. Yeah.
So just to say where we're getting some of this info. So when Wizards made the announcement of the set, they accidentally prematurely posted their what seemed to be their official Amazon shop listings for these products.
Uh-huh.
And they had booster boxes, 24 packs for $300, and booster packs themselves for, you know, like almost $17 a pack. So, you know, and you're seeing pre-orders for other places going upwards of like, you know, $350. So to me, $17 a pack is just like, what is actually the point of this product? Because this is the thing that pisses me off so much about master sets. I love limited. Every master set, pretty much, I've bought a box sight unseen. I have you guys over, you know, some group of people and we draft it. I love that stuff. And they make great draft environments most of the time. But I can never play that with anybody because before they were, oh, even $7 a pack. Yeah, maybe I'll do one draft. $10, $12 a pack. No, I'm not doing drafts. And now we're getting to a point where after tax, you're looking at almost $20 per booster pack. Mm-hmm. What, you know, if you're in a card shop and you're playing you're playing a tournament with any kind of support, which by the way, can't talk today. The shops that I go to, would not do, prize support on a regular master set because of the cost. Mm-hmm. You know, like if you're going to play anywhere with prize support, it's gonna be $65 or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, or $60, or if I'm optimistic, $55 or whatever. But basically my point is nobody's going to draft this set with me. And it's really difficult. Like this is even for me, somebody who like a lot of times spends way more money on this game than I really should. Yeah. it's at that point where I'm just like, how can I spend $300 to draft this one time?
Yes.
One time you're going to get one draft out of that. And that to me is the real shame because it's not even just that the game pieces are in general too expensive for people to play. It's now the format that I like to play is too expensive to even play with anybody. You know, limited is a thing where I think it is not the most popular format. It used to be. At one point, draft was the most popular format. It's really not. And I think the fact that they keep pricing these things up so much is just really quite a shame. And to see the justification of the price essentially be, and this comes from a question that was posted on Mark Rosewater's blog today, which, you know, kudos to him for still running that. I cannot believe he does, with the amount of hate he undeservedly gets through that platform. Anyway, you know, the justification given about this price was essentially, you know, there are people who want these expensive products. And to me, that just seems like do people want the product to be expensive or do they want a high value, bling kind of product?
Yeah.
And you know, this, I think all of the mythics better be Mana Crypts and Atraxas and stuff in this set really. But here's the other thing is there's no fetch lands in this set.
Yeah.
The fetch lands are so, I think the outrage over the cost of fetch lands is so, it's gotten so bad that they even put in the announcement for the set that there are not fetch lands in the set. They have to do that now. And to me, it's just like, just sell the goddamn game pieces and let people play your game. You know what? You sell me this Mana Crypt for $60. I might actually buy that and throw that in my deck. I'm not buying a booster box at $300 and hoping to get one.
Right, right. It's a good point. I mean, the appearance rate for mythics is so low. You have to remember, like, I don't know where the math works out in a set like this, but like, there's a good chance you don't see most of the mythics you want in this box. And you have to remember that. Because when they roll these products out in the first wave of spoilers or previews, I suppose, is like the high value cards, like it's so difficult for someone to sit down and figure out with charts and graphs what the average expected value is of a pack, you know, unless you go and find someone that's done the research for you. But
and that's the crazy thing. Just to interrupt you, I'm sorry, but that's the crazy thing is you shouldn't have to do that. These should be a product that is $4 or $5 or maybe even $6 or whatever, and it's an impulse buy. Magic is getting to the point where it can't be that anymore.
Absolutely. I'm certainly not implying that you're buying a pack with the intention of making money on it. That's not the point, right? Mm-hmm. But the point is, what is my potential loss is really the concern. It's like, if I'm going to invest $16 in a goddamn pack of cards, what is the floor on this? How disappointed could I be when I find the Tree of Perditions? You know what I mean? And I think that sucks. That's a shitty way to go into it. And if I'm concerned whether or not I want to buy this really cool flashy set because I could just have lost $16 each time I open a pack, oh man, it doesn't feel good.
Yeah, and it's I think the thing that I've seen a couple really interesting arguments that I think are worth bringing up here, or a couple reasons why we might be seeing more of these products with all of this stuff you want at a price that you just shouldn't even consider trying to get it. One is, if you look at the EV of the kind of extreme case in terms of set size, mm-hmm. and the number of these cards in the set, that's obviously Mystery Booster, right? Huge, huge card pool. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I saw pointed out is you have this huge card pool. The bigger the card pool, it means you can put more cards in the card pool that people want. So you can put more Mana Crypts and Kalias and Atraxas and all that kind of stuff that people want.
Yeah.
And make that product look good, because people aren't thinking, how often am I going to get this? They're thinking, oh, I can get this. This set has these kinds of cards. So what happens is you put more of these high value cards in one set, but you put more rares and mythics, so the total pool is larger. And what it means is you get to spread out that decrease in the secondary value of the cards, mm-hmm. across a much larger amount of cards.
Right.
So what you essentially see is they can throw more of these high value cards if they make it twice or more than twice as difficult to find them, or even just make it twice as difficult to find them. You're basically cutting that difference in EV on that card, so you can resell it later as something, you know, people are looking for. So that was one thing that I saw. That was interesting to point out about that, about this, how, you know, you basically can control that EV a little bit. And the other thing that I saw, and now I've lost it. Oh boy. Well, whatever. I'm sure it'll come back to me.
All right.
But basically that's just an interesting thing to pay attention to here is yeah, you know, what are those handful of things that I actually want? What are the things that are going to make me feel like, you know, why did I even draft this?
Right. For the record, this set has 332 cards in it, in case you were wondering, based on John's points there.
Oh, I remembered the other point. Okay, I'll make it very quick. The other point was that this kind of product and some of the secret layers, which we'll get to in a bit, having the price so high and getting less for that in terms of the actual physical thing you're buying just continues to really eliminate this illusion that the cost of the product has anything to do with what WotC's, you know, paying to produce it or whatever.
Right, right.
You know, you're getting double masters, boosters, booster packs. Now, keep in mind to draft, or not double masters, jumpstart. Keep in mind to draft jumpstart, you will need to buy more packs, I think, or maybe you don't draft it. Maybe you just shuffle them together. But anyway, jumpstart booster packs are 20 cards for, like, you know, $5 or whatever.
Yeah.
And these are almost $20 for 15 cards.
Okay, on that topic though, and I, to kind of like play devil's advocate or kind of look at to the other side of things, I do support making the packs smaller and increasing the, you know, like the rare count in the pack without necessarily needing to add 14 extra commons and uncommons that aren't going to see the light of day for each rare that might have like some value to it. Because if you consider, and I'm not considering limited when I say this because I'm not a limited player, but I know that's a factor. But if you consider how many packs are just torn open by constructed Magic players, and then one out of 15 cards goes into the binder and the rest of them just get left on the table somewhere because they're just completely valueless to them, why do we have to waste all that paper? Why do you have to waste all that material? We might as well just pack it into two rares, two foils. It's what you're really going for. And then the remainder of the cards can just be eliminated. Go on.
I think the reason you can't eliminate all of that filler is because limited, this is my understanding, I'm not a legal expert, but my understanding is that limited is one of the ways that you get around this being gambling, because it's not you're not opening booster packs are made to draft. I mean, they specifically call them draft boosters now. Mm-hmm. And they call, you know, like collector's boosters are collector boosters, and they have a different distribution of the product. So I think that's part of the reason is because you have to say this is part of a game for it to not be gambling, at least in certain places. So I think that's part of it.
Really?
So, yeah, but I do get the point, like why are you printing all of these extra cards? But I mean, like a booster pack has to cost them close to nothing to print, honestly.
Oh, right.
Like most of the cost has to be in distribution and in that kind of stuff. But my point is really just that these two pieces of paper that you're selling me at 17 different price points, they cost you the same amount to make. And in some of these premium products, like the foils are worse than some of the other printings of foils, for example. You know, you have stuff from the first Secret Lairs coming already curled in the box. So, you know, if you're going to sell me a premium product, you know, give me something that looks really premium. Give me foils that look like some of those Pokemon cards that look like metal and have like, you know, debossed patterns on them and stuff like that. Give us crazy things that clearly you put effort into, you know, and that's effort. Not to say they don't put effort into these, you know, well, into making the sets, but you know, show me that there is more of a cost and more of an effort than just we put higher secondary value cards in the set.
Yes. And this is a good segue too, but we've found that the Secret Lair experiment has been very successful. So people are willing to shell out for cosmetics. We see that from Fortnite and all the bullshit that people buy online. You know, there is an interest in like replacing old versions of a played card with a new version that has like some unique art to it or some unique art style to it. So when it comes to like these showcase cards, like, yeah, that's great. I think that's a good way that they can move a product like this because there are interesting showcase arts that we haven't seen before. You can only get from this pack. But if those are only box toppers, then, you know, it's like, then that point is moot anyway. But, case in point here, there are more showcase sets coming out. I don't know how you felt about the last dump. We had those, was it like 5 or 6 days in a row where you could purchase a new showcase set. There was the snow covered basics. There's the Bitter Blossom pack.
That was the Kitties. First set of Secret Lair drops. Yeah.
Yeah. I thought, you know, I thought it was a really cool way to, eliminate that expected value gamble and just saying, this is what I'm going to get for this amount of money. You know, there are no surprises. There's no disappointment because I know exactly what's arriving. The only surprise is how badass is it going to look when I take it out of the box and I get to see the foil in real life, right?
Yeah, when I get to handle that curled $40 foil that I can't play in any of my decks.
But before we get onto the new list of Secret Lairs, I want to just go back and just revisit the last dump and just see how they kind of they aged, because you do have to consider the value of these based on the fact that the price is so high for like 4 or 5 pieces of cardboard. Once again, here we go. The amount of cardboard you get doesn't equate to the price that you're paying for it. It has nothing to do with it.
No, it's generally speaking going to be the secondary cost of those cards minus about 20% is how they price these. It's about 20% or so under what you would pay for them on the secondary market.
So just to review, I did mention a couple of these. There was the Bitter Blossom with the 4 tokens. That one was a $30 drop. Bitter Blossom you can get on TCG Player right now for about $30. That's not to count the tokens or the Planeswalker you get from it. So held up pretty well. I'm going to skip this next one for a sec. The Restless in Peace, the Golgari Thug Bloodghast Life from the Loam, also held up pretty well. $30. I think you get even over $30 worth of cards. The Serum Visions, the playset of 4 different arts of Serum Visions. I like that one. I bought that one. $30 for uncommons. Didn't hold up so well. Those are all like $5 or $6 a piece. So it's not like a big loss, but if it comes to finding the singles, you can just purchase them individually.
I kind of want to go buy all the other. I want to go build out a playset of them now.
Yeah, some of them are like $5. The I think the tea drinking one is like $6 or $7 one. So it depends which playset you want, but you know that it's not a big loss, and that doesn't count the stained glass planeswalker that comes with it. So yeah, the goblin set was a pretty good deal. I think you got about $30 worth of value for $30. The Kaleidoscope Killers were the 5-mana, or the Wooburg EDH Generals. Those ones held up pretty well, too. But the Cats did pretty well. I think that you... Oh, those were priced at $40.
Cats were priced at $40. The interesting thing is some of these, like Regal Caracal, is way more expensive from the Cats set, I think.
Yeah,
just because of that art. But like the Cats, nobody plays any of these cards really. Play these in some commander. So the Cats is like you need to be either just a big fan of the art or a Cats commander player, I think, to have bought that, because it's really a very poor value compared to even the you know, the $40 cost. But again, unique art.
Yeah, playability-wise, absolutely. But when it comes to, like, building a thematic cat stack and just being interested in, like, the cosmetic value of your cards, I think there's something to offer here. The Miri Weatherlight Duelist is, like, a $20 card. The Roar of the World, was it Araba, the commander, also, like, $20. So there's enough value in there to justify that price tag for it. The one that I really want to draw attention to, though, and I'm surprised by this, the Basic Lands one. That was $30 for one of each of five snow-covered lands. The island itself is like $30 on TCG Player right now. Now, the other ones are not that expensive, but you absolutely get your value with basic lands. And looking back when this was first coming out and I was trying to predict like which ones of these were going to be the best buy at the time, I didn't think it was the lands. I knew that people are interested in land arts, but there's just so many out there. I think this goes to show that the drawbacks to running snow-covered lands in constructed formats like Modern or Legacy are just so, well, they don't exist. Really, they aren't.
I was going to say, is there some drawback? Because I'm not sure I know about it.
You don't have many choices in how you can pimp out those decks because there's only the, like, you know, three different choices of snow-covered arts besides these. These are the greatest of them, right? So if you're really interested in making the flashy choice, then this is the way to go.
I do want to say, you know, I am very much in favor of cosmetic extras. I think that they are great. I think the Eldraine Wonderland lands are a great example of, you know, how they should do cosmetics. Forget the price for now, but just in general, here is a fancy, very special version of a thing you can get for a lot cheaper. Now, snow-covered lands, obviously, they still, you know, I don't know what they're going for. I'm sure they're not free like regular basic lands are. But, you know, like the Godzilla lands, that was another recent Secret Lair product, and I think that's a perfect example of, you know, if you want to waste $40 or whatever on five lands with Godzilla in it, yeah, no problem. You can go pick up planes from your LGS for free or whatever, you know, if you need them. So I do like that, but I think the thing that still gets me about the prices of these is, yes, the dollar value has held up for most of them, but it to me is still not a good value as a product, because it's like, okay, do I want to buy one copy of this Bitter Blossom, or do I want to buy a whole Commander Precon?
Right.
You know, it's not a good actual value as a product. It is a good value if you plan on reselling these cards in the future, or you want that blinged out version in your deck, you know, or something like that. Or you just, you know, you happen to need four Bitter Blossoms the one day that they're selling four Bitter Blossoms for this price. To me, that's the only time these are really a good value, but they're bling. They're not anything you need. Unless you're a fetch land, in which case it's a horrendous product. But but anyway, yeah, I do think generally speaking, the cash value of most of these cards have held up, whether or not you can actually extract that from them or not.
Yeah. Well, I think that it's being an optional buy is a good way to go about, you know, extracting more cash from the whales in the game, because there are players that are just interested in that cosmetic value. And I think it's totally fine for that to be the case. But as you mentioned, the fetch land, where it's like people are just clamoring for a reprint of fetch lands, if the only way that it's going to come is a completely overpriced version of the fetch lands, then that sucks. So the only thing that's going to do is perhaps allow people that have the playsets of regular fetch lands to then sell those off and maybe lower the value of the older fetch lands by a couple of quarters. But
sure.
Anyways, the new one that's coming out, though, I have to say I'm not terribly excited about any of these, but they're there.
I'm excited for some of them.
Starting June 1st, you can purchase a different Secret Lair each day, just like the last bunch. The first one spoiled, the full sleeves, the tattoo pack, which are these like fleshy colored backgrounds with tattoo arts for this kind of random allotment of cards. But I do like this grouping. Spell Pierce, Blood Artist, Eternal Witness, Pithing Needle, and Blink Moth Nexus. I don't understand how they chose those, but they're all Modern playable.
This is the tattoo pack. Yeah. Full sleeves, colon, the tattoo pack, they called it. And I just want to call out, this is tattoo artist Josh Howard.
They should come with temporary tattoos. If they don't already with temporary tattoos, they ought to, right?
That would be awesome.
So, yeah, they're kind of cool. I mean, I like the fact that they're trying something unique like this. I don't think that these are all that impressive art-wise. Like, I get it. You're limited in what you can do with the tattoo, but you're not with a piece of cardboard. So,
do we know I found a list here. So this is one of the ones that is non-foil.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Right?
Actually, I don't see, my link does not say that, so if you see that.
Oh, no, this says one non-foil copy of each card for Magic Online, so I'm not sure which ones are foil or not. That's the thing that's confusing about these packs, is they never, they do tell you, but it's not consistent from one drop to the other, whether it's going to be foil or not. Yeah, but anyway, yeah, this one is non-foil, I think. It would make sense, but anyway, maybe it's not. I think the Eternal Witness looks pretty awesome. It's got like kind of a cool red Riding Hood kind of vibe, and the spell pierce just feels like somebody trying to make old style magic art, you know, where it's kind of like do anything. I think Blood Artist looks like little bit like a, I mean, he's crying blood. It's just like a little like, I've stumbled on somebody's DeviantArt page.
Yeah.
But the Pithing Needle's cool too. I think that one looks really awesome.
Yeah.
Ink Moth Nexus is, meh.
Meh.
But yeah, I think I'll probably pick that one up.
Yeah. That's a $30 pack. Like I said, all those cards get played. None of them terribly valuable. Like, Blood Artist doesn't really see much play at all, but it could be. Like, it's good enough.
Oh, Blood Artist sees a lot of Commander play.
In Commander, yes, that's true. I'm thinking Modern here. Ink Moth Nexus, though, right, is a pretty valuable constructed playable card. So I think that one kind of holds a lot of the value in the pack. Eternal Witness, players are always looking for, you know, promo art Eternal Witness. And there are some, but there's, you know, never any shortage of demand for those because of how that card is such a multi-format all-star.
Blood Artist, by the way, is an uncommon. This will be its fifth printing, and it's $4.
Oh, wow. Okay. That's a little value there. Interesting. All right, next one, Heart of Steel, Secret Lair. This is June 2nd. This is artifact creatures, like really powerful artifact creatures. So there are three of them, and they are like, I don't know how else to describe them, but like metal, like garage metal artwork, like poster art. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah. It's robot themed illustrations by Bad Flip Productions.
Okay. Well,
I don't know anything about Bad Flip Productions. What is that?
They totally look like the bass drum cover for like a hair metal band.
So, Bad Flip Productions makes games, I think.
Oh, do they?
They made a Transformers game in 2009.
Okay, well, that would explain this Walking Ballista, which looks like a Transformer.
Yeah. This pack, you're basically buying Walking Ballista, right?
Arcbound Ravager is worth something. Dark Steel Colossus is probably worth something for Commander. They're all good. Those are the three. Arcbound Ravager, Dark Steel Colossus, Walking Ballista. The art is cool. I think Ballista is by far the most played and probably the most in demand. That said, it's cool enough where I might just have to find a couple of these guys to replace my boring old Ballista arts. That's a card that's never had a promo. I don't know that Dark Steel Colossus has, but I wouldn't be surprised if it did. And I know Ravenger has a Judge promo or a GP promo or something out there. So first reprint for Ballista, looking like a goddamn golden Transformer. I think that's going to sell some of these guys.
Yeah, I think this is... Yeah, if you're looking for Ballistas and you want them to look like a Transformer, I guess this is where you go.
Unfortunately, this is a $40 one, which is kind of insane to me, but whatever.
Yeah, this is the same. This is, well, similar to the first set of drops where the five color commanders were inexplicably $10 more than the rest, but yeah. I don't know. Those are pretty cool. I don't think there's anything really all that appealing to me personally, but I do think the Colossus looks pretty neat.
Yeah, same. I think I'd pass on that one too, but
yeah,
to each their own. The next one, The Path Not Traveled, June 3rd. I think it's funny that this is called The Path Not Traveled because this is a collection of four planeswalkers that do not get played.
Yeah, I wasn't sure. This one seemed like it was supposed to be like a movie character themed, and it seemed like they based the art off of different cosplayers' renditions of these characters, which was pretty cool.
Okay.
Yeah, so I don't know the full backstory, but if you look at the actual posts where they announced these, they have the actual, like, the they were announced on Twitter by the cosplayers.
Oh,
and they included the reference photos, which was pretty neat.
Yeah, the this pack includes a Johnny Steadfast, which looks like a Marvel superhero. That one's kind of badass, actually. Domri Rod looks like an Indiana Jones type riding a boar. That card, I do like Domri Rod, and if I'm going to play one, I might as well pimp it out with a really cool alternative art version. Tamiyo Field Researcher. I can't really tell what's going on there.
I think it's supposed to be detective. like kind of a detective solving a mystery, almost an Indiana Jones kind of vibe as well.
Kind of explains the clues a little bit. And then Vraska Golgari Queen. I mean, they all see some fringe play. They're certainly Pioneer playable in each case.
I'm picking up the Vraska for sure.
What's going on there? So what does it say behind it?
Swarm formal. So she's the queen of the swarm, like prom, basically.
Oh my god.
Jesus. She's wearing a big sash that says Swarm King 2020 or Swarm Queen 2020 or something. Yep. I like that one a lot. And Vraska is just like kind of one of my, that specifically for whatever reason is one of my favorite planeswalkers. Yeah. So I'll totally pick up one of those for commander or something like that.
This is a $40 pack. Okay. So here, these ones are foil. The artifacts are foil. The tattoos are not.
Gotcha.
Okay. Then the next one. Oh, I lied. I forgot this one exists. I'm definitely going to be getting this one. Mountain Go Secret Lair, June 4th. Oh, no. This is $29.99 for four alternate art lightning bolts. And
the art on these are sweet.
They're very cool. Yeah, they are full art with a text box, but it's a transparent text box. And each one is just a different take on something getting blasted to shit by a lightning bolt.
I think my favorite here is this one by Alexis Zirit. I'm not sure if I've ever seen Zirit. Not sure I've ever seen that name before. So I'm not sure if they've designed art for the game before. But anyway, that like dark skull in the clouds, like conjuring down the lightning bolt on. I wonder what, I'm sure these are all actual creatures. They probably, that seems like the kind of thing they would do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One of them.
Yeah. This one looks great.
That one,
the bear
looks
one
like
is really cool too.
The skull one looks like a Flaming Lips or a King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard album cover.
Yeah, it's got this like ink block print kind of vibe to it. Mm-hmm. Like the way the hashes are in there and everything. The bear one's pretty sweet. The Noah Bradley one almost looks more like it should be a land or something. But
oh, yeah. Well, that's so cool. These ones are foil also. And that's a $30 set. And then
lightning bolt's the perfect product to go with this, just like basic lands, by the way, the perfect card to select, because if you need lightning bolts, you can get them for a buck or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. And my favorite part of this now is that we have access to four different art lightning bolts, four different art serum visions. The blue red tempo strategies are looking really spicy right now.
Yeah. I wonder how many total print like arts have there been for Lightning Bolt.
A lot. Yeah. Oh my gosh. They're actually not as many as you'd think, because I think that there's a textless one, and then there's the GP ones that came out more recently.
But I'm counting eight.
From that, promo art? I don't think there have been
for promo for promo art. I think there's like six if you don't count like promo versions of the originals, because there's the full art textless like player rewards or whatever, and then there was the more recent Magic Fest one, which I still think maybe the Magic Fest one looks better than these new ones, but still they're all pretty sick.
All right, last but not least, June 5th, the birds, ornithological studies. These are very like, they look like the pictures came out of like a nature like reference manual or something, like for bird watching.
Yes. Oh yeah.
And this includes Swan Song, Birds of Paradise, Gilded Goose, which doesn't even look gilded really, Baleful Strix, and Dovescape. I think it's clever how they included like non-bird cards in here too that have some reference to a bird. And I think it's a good set too. Dovescape is a card that gets played. It's a combo piece. Swan Song gets played a lot.
Well, just look at that available. Birds of Paradise.
Yeah. That's the winner right there.
Unbelievable. I love that.
These are non-foil, which is sweet. and it is $30 pack for 5 playable cards. So I think this is another winner too.
Now there's one thing you didn't mention, which I'm not sure if you know about this, but do you know what happens if we buy all of them?
Yes, you get one random fetch land.
Yes. So what was the price on that full set? It's something like $170, $169.95.
Yep.
So I think that this is, I've heard this argument made by other people, so I'm certainly not the first to make this. This to me seems like a pack where you should either buy the singles that you want, or you should buy the entire pack, the entire set.
Mm-hmm.
The reason being, right now, all of those fetch lands. So this is from the fetch land secret lair drop that they come out of. So these are they started with the enemies, right? Mm-hmm. The enemy fetches.
Yeah.
So you get one of those, and currently the least valuable one is upwards of $70. And if you look at like Tarns and Misty, I think those are like 100 to 120 each. So yes. So if you're going to buy one or two packs and you have the ability to move the extra stuff you don't want, it's probably worth it to just buy it all, get yourself the fetch, and keep the couple cards that you want. Otherwise, it's probably best to just buy the singles that interest you.
Yeah. I wonder if that is going to devalue the lesser purchased ones, because people are going to buy the set. They're going to like take the ones they want, and then they're going to be left with the tattoo one to try to sell on eBay. And it's, you know, is there a potential that that one's going to then go for like $20 on eBay, even though it like retails for $30 on its own?
Yeah, possibly.
So if you're interested in those and you're thinking like, well, maybe not a lot of other people are, you might want to wait on them and just see if you can get them that way. Because I'd imagine that a lot of people are going to see the obvious, you know, value of that random Fetchland edition. All these are like playable fetch lands. There's no stinker in the bunch. I mean, Marsh Flats is the least played one, and that's probably like the $70 one you mentioned. That's still a good chunk of change. Pays for nearly half of the drop.
Yeah. Yeah, so, definitely. I think this is again, one of the things where I think the price of these products is ridiculous, and the amount that they're just in general asking folks to pay for the hobby is too much. But I do really like incentivizing, just in general, giving us the cosmetic stuff over, you know, double masters, an entire set that we can't, you know, you functionally cannot play this because it's a Nintendo Switch to play one draft, you know, that kind of, yeah, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But this here, you know, this totally optional, there's, you know, besides the heinous cost of the fetches or whatever, there's no real problem with just selling some of these cards. And, you know, the art, again, you know, just like the last set and some of the other products, even if they're not all in my wheelhouse, I still really appreciate the wide range of arts and all that kind of stuff. That's all really cool to see.
Yeah.
And something to mention, we do have one secret lair drop that we haven't gotten yet, but they've announced.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So on April 1st, they announced the set with Goblin Snowman, Mudhole, Squire, and Stormcrow. They still haven't told us when we can actually buy them, but they are a real product that's going to be made. So I just want to mention, once we get to that point, then we can truly say, you know, once they've released a pack with Squire and Stormcrow for $700 mm-hmm. for 4 cards, then we'll know they've gone too far.
You know what they could do? They could have a very limited print run on those and just do it for a charity.
That's an awesome idea too. That's where you see like 10 years from now, you see pictures of these cards on a website and go, oh man, I wish I had that.
Yeah.
Now it's $7,000 because they made 15 of them or whatever, you know?
And it's just a freaking Squire.
That would be awesome.
But no, I'm sure it would sell like crazy, actually. Just because of the meme value.
And, I mean, they're going to do more of that kind of thing. Like, you know, we like to complain and then joke about how much we complain sometimes. But they do still do awesome things, like the Women's Day drop was really cool. Mm-hmm. This drop that we've been joking about is specifically going to be for LGSs when they open at some point. That's why they haven't printed them. It's going to be something for them to sell. So
oh Oh, I didn't know that, actually. The whole shebang, the 170, is for LGSs? Or are you talking about the Squire one?
The Squire. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Sorry. No, the drops are just from Wizards.
Oh, yeah,
this is something that we should comment on just briefly, is the what secret lair actually means. People have given Wizards a lot of crap for these other secret lair projects that weren't limited time drops like the first set.
Uh-huh.
But Wizards did say from the very beginning that this is just a brand name for certain products that we would like to experiment with. And I think that they just confuse people by the first one being the drops series, but they will do other stuff like things sold through LGSs and,
mm-hmm.
you know, the fetch lands and stuff like that.
Yeah. I thought for a second that they were that kind and they were going to donate a lot of those proceeds to LGSs. No.
But I do think they're doing another set of, I could be wrong about this, but I think they might be doing another wave of mystery boosters for them.
Mm-hmm. That would be nice.
Stuff like that.
Yeah, that is worth mentioning. They did that. That was very kind. It's funny to think though that they're releasing all these like really like relevant and playable cards and these ones like Lightning Bolt playsets, and then the LGSs get the Squire and the Goblin Snowman.
The meme ones.
Feels a little but they're shafted, but they'll definitely sell, I know.
Yeah. I think the other thing to consider is you can't play Paper Magic with people very easily right now. So that is kind of a bummer on picking up these cool like blinged out cards. Is like when will I next get to actually play Commander with folks?
Yeah.
And actually play that Marin. And additionally, one thing to keep in mind when deciding if you want to buy these products is apparently some of the older secret lair products have not shipped yet.
Oh wow.
So there's certain of these products where they have been cleared that they've had problems with producing products. So I don't think we need to really get into it, but I do think there is a bit of criticism to be leveled for the fact that they keep on this rate of when these products should be released, whether mm-hmm. they can actually fulfill them. So who knows what the actual wait's going to be. Apparently for international folks in particularly, it's going to be potentially a while to actually get the cards.
Yeah. All right, man. On that note, I think we better wrap up. We had a good long conversation about a lot of different things today. Thanks for
awesome.
Stepping
Thanks
in.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Bye.
Card Knock Life is proud to be a part of mtgcast.com. We can be reached at cardknocklifepodcast.com or on Twitter at card_knock_life. We're always looking for more help in generating content for the website, and if you'd be interested in doing so, please email at cardknocklifepodcast@gmail.com.